I brought with me a few friends this morning. They've been here before. My smiley friend, my rather grumpy friend, mirrored by many this morning. My very confused friend, my rather shocked and horrified friend, felt that way on Friday morning. My very upset and sad friend. I have a number of friends here this morning. I wonder which friend represents you. Is it the sad friend this morning? No, some may be. Is it the shocked and horrified friend? Yes. Oh, Imogen. She's shocked and horrified. Is it the smiley friend? Oh, a few. Is it the rather angry and upset friend? Or is it the confused, slightly unsure as to what's going on friend? Do you know when we feel certain ways, we often show it on our faces. People can see by looking at us whether we're happy or sad or confused or angry. But we also show it in other ways, with the rest of our bodies. Not that often in our country, as we're quite reserved, aren't we? But sometimes we get so excited that we actually move more than our mouths. How might we react in an excited way? Oh, clapping's a good one, yes. Bit of wooing, oh, arms in the air, yes. Jumping up and down, but no one's going to do it. But yes, we could do that. Sometimes when we're very, very sad, we don't just have a droopy mouth. What other things might we do? Huffing, yes. Droopy shoulders, yes. Anything else? What about a bit of... Oh! Like you all were then when suddenly I, you know, a bit confused. Do we just look all quizzical? Do we do anything else with our bodies? Scratching your head? Mm. Stomping? Oh, do you stomp? Pacing? Oh, Oh, what's... That was a good one. Thinking and confused. Okay, what might we do if we're really angry? Slam doors. Oh, that always makes you feel better for 2 seconds and then you feel terrible. Slam a door, yes. Sorry? Shake someone. Let's not recommend that. But, you know, yes. What other things? Body things. What might we do? Doing that in the house. We do lots of things, don't we? With our bodies, when we're happy, sad, excited, sometimes we only do it on our own. We don't just use our faces. And yet when we're in church and we're worshipping God, we mainly use our mouths. Such a tiny part of our body. But we have arms and legs and everything. We talked last week about elections, and the elections have happened, or the election, should I say, and we talked about how we were called as people of God to pray for those in government, whether we agree with what they do, whether we support what they do, we're called to pray for them and to support them. We're also called to pray for situations surrounding us. We're called to pray for those who are poor, for those who are struggling, for those who are suffering. And we're called to bring our own lives before God. We're called to communicate with God, not just to pretend we know what God would want or to speak wisely about the things of the Bible, but we're called to have a real, proper relationship with God, our Father. We continue in our study of 1 Thessalonians And I'd like to invite Esther now to come and read from 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 1 to 12.
You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure. We had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel in spite of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as men approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please men, but God, who tests our hearts. You know we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from men, not from you or anyone else. As apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us. Surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. Amen.
Thank you, Esther. As we said, over the last few months, a lot of promises have been made to us. One political party promising one thing, one another. But all the time, we have known, because we're pretty clever people, I guess, generally, that we've only been bought these promises because they want something from us. However sincere and believed they are, we know these parties have approached us because they've wanted our vote. It's an exchange, if you like. We offer you something that you like, that you agree with, that you want, and you give us your vote. And that's how it works. And in the time of Paul, the time that this letter was written, and just before that, of course, there wasn't democracy. You didn't elect the emperor to Rome. They ruled as a god. But you did have lots of other things that were exchanged. You had relationships with many people who would offer you things and you were expected to give them something in return. Most times in the time of Paul, this happened when people visited towns and villages. There were lots of travellers, there were lots of people going around, and they would come and offer things to people. That's how it worked. So it would be people like travelling salesmen would come to your village, to your town, to your city, and they would do a whole pitch, but then they would expect you to buy into what was happening. Or you would get teachers who would come around teaching the latest things about religion and thoughtful things like that, but they would expect your following. They would expect you to become their followers. And then you had philosophers, maybe, who were talking about various things that were going on, thinking about the world and the way things were, but they would expect you to promote these things. In Paul's time, there were lots of people that travelled from town to town, from village to village, from city to city, who offered things and expected in return. So when Paul arrived in Thessalonica, like all these other people that arrived every single day, he decided to come in a different way. He didn't want to offer things in exchange for something. He decided to come in a different way. And he, Timothy and Silas came together. They didn't come, as they said, out of impure motives, wanting something from themselves like many people did. They didn't come to try to trick. They didn't come to use flattery. They didn't come to cover up their greed. They came instead to do one thing, and that was, as Paul says in this passage, to share their lives with those in Thessalonica. And in sharing their lives, they shared the good news of Jesus Christ. It was a different way of being. In those times, it would be a radically different way of being. We're not just talking at you and offering something so you will give something back. We are sharing our lives with you. And we're sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. It was very radical. And it got me to thinking, what did it mean for Paul, Timothy and Silas to share their lives in a different way to what anyone else had done with these people? But then it got me thinking, well, what does it mean for us to share our lives with other people if we are to be followers of Jesus like Paul, Timothy and Silas were? Do you think God desires for us to share our lives with others in order for the good news of God to come and be shared with others? Is there such a thing as having a private life where you act differently, where you're a different kind of person, and a public life where you share the love of God? Is there such a thing as that when you're a Christian? Should we have private and public lives, or should all of our life be open to everyone so that we share it, so that the good news of Jesus can be known? In fact, can the good news of Jesus be shared with other people if we don't also share our entire lives with them? Well, you might expect me to now stand here and talk about those things and answer those questions, but no, not this morning. This morning, you are going to also do some work. Not that you don't do some work, I'm not saying that you're lazy or anything like that, but I have a few questions. And maybe where you are, in groups, twos, or, you know, on your own if you don't feel like talking, I'd like you to discuss those very questions I've just posed to you, and then, well, maybe I'll share a few things. You know, I've got to earn my words at work, my money, haven't I, at the end. So, just a few minutes, say 10 minutes, a few questions to think about, to discuss. Oh, I'm bargaining for this. What's Kate do? Do you want one, Monique? Oh, you'll shuffle over. Inviting people for a meal, having a meal. Yes, inviting people for a meal and is a good way of sharing your lives, especially to your home, but going out for a meal as well. Be a community together. Yeah. So the excitement of thinking, oh, we're going to spend time together as Christians, how exciting, it's going to be wonderful, but then all of a sudden, oh dear, no, terrible. But it's working that out, and working out the sharing of lives can be quite difficult. We behave differently with... Yes, yeah. Did you hear that? Conrad was just talking about how they were talking about the sort of the way we behave with different people, and even between generations we behave differently, like in families. They're saying that was from Mark, but you know, look, in this group, not that we want to disown the things that we're saying. Well, it is. I mean, I agree. It's true. We all behave differently depending on who we're with. Slightly differently, don't we? We have, you know, when we're with our children, we behave slightly differently as to when we're with a group of adults. Because, you know, if you said, "Oh, let's play," you know, this game together, I'm going to go, "You're strange." But you know, we do behave, and of course, that's natural, isn't it? Because you accommodate each other, as Margaret was saying. You know, learn to sort of live with each other. And we all do that, but there is a call, isn't there, to be, I guess what Paul does is be consistent when you share your lives, to be consistent in how you live, to be transparent, whether we behave differently in certain situations, to behave consistently with the good news of Jesus Christ, to be transparent in the way we are, to be committed and to live honest and open lives, whoever we're with. And in this letter, this second chapter, to the letter to Thessalonica, to the church there, Paul is sort of pointing this out. He's saying that he came with Silas and Timothy with the good news of Jesus Christ. And he didn't come there to preach it and just say the words. He didn't come there to have a big event where lots of people get converted and then go, yay, that was brilliant. He didn't come to tell them all about what Jesus had done and was going to do. He said specifically, we came and we shared our lives among you. It's in verse 8. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. We didn't come to pronounce love, Paul says. We came to share it. We worked among you. They had jobs and lived normal lives with normal jobs. They cared for the people there. Where they shared their whole lives. Or if you like, when Paul and Silas and Timothy went to Thessalonica to preach the good news of Jesus, their full intention was to live this out. Whatever situation they were with, whether it was preaching to everyone on the big occasion when people had come to listen, or whether it was in sharing a meal or having a drink at the end of a long, busy working day when they were tired and stressed and worn out, as well as everyone else being tired and stressed and worn out. They wanted to share the good news of Jesus in that situation as well as in the other. Because for Paul and Timothy and Silas, the sharing of life as well as the sharing of words was vital if the good news of Jesus was going to go anywhere. To the point that, I don't know whether you've noticed in Paul's letters, but the beginning of this letter, and also lots of other of the letters that he wrote, he urges people to look at his life in order to see Jesus. He says in Philippians, he says, "Join together in following my example, brothers and sisters." In 1 Corinthians, he says, "Therefore, I urge you to imitate me, to copy my life." And at the beginning of this letter, "You became imitators of us," of Paul, Timothy, and Silas, and of the Lord. Because for Paul, his life on public occasions and his life in private was one. It was a living example to Jesus Christ. Everything he did, whether he acted slightly differently with certain generations or certain people, everything he did was done for Jesus. In his words, he says in verse 4, "We are not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts." And I think this is a huge challenge for us, because one of the things that our culture, our society, holds up as vitally important is the right to privacy. You know, it's our life, and we have to have privacy in our life. It's the right to have a part of life where no one else can invade it and we are in control and we can behave as we want to behave, which is fine. It's good to have privacy. We need to have privacy. But so often it can lead to us thinking we have sort of separate lives. We live one way with one set of people, one way with another, one way at church, one way outside of church. And, you know, we choose to behave differently depending on what area of our life we're living in at that time. Which begs the question for us when we're thinking about all this, is the way we behave when we're out for a meal or having a drink with friends or stressed at work or rushing around or relaxing at home, is it all of it consistent with the good news of Jesus Christ, with the way that Jesus called us to live and changed our lives to be? Are the things we do during the week consistent with the things we say when we gather on a Sunday morning and we're in this setting and we're talking to people at coffee? If push came to shove, could we really turn around to people and say, as Paul did, if you want to see what Jesus is like, if you want to know the good news of Jesus Christ, then look at me. Imitate my life. Look at what I do when I'm out with my friends. Look at what I do when I'm stressed at work. Look at what I do when I'm with my family. Look at what I do when I go to church and worship. And you'll see Jesus. Because quite honestly, a lot of the time, I don't know whether I'd feel confident saying that to people. Quite a lot of the time when I'm stressed and rushing around at home, I'm not really sure I'd like people to look at me and see Jesus. I don't think they would a lot of the time. And yet Paul says this again and again and again to people, with the inference that those who follow Jesus should be able to say the same thing. He's not a special person. He knows he's a follower of Jesus Christ and he's made mistakes. And so each one of us should be able to say it too. I mean, we all make mistakes. We're not perfect. But we're called to be consistent, to live lives that are transparent and open, so that when people look at our lives, they can see that Jesus Christ is good news. When they watch what we do, they can see there's a difference in what we're like. When they socialise or they work with us or they worship with us, they see that in all those areas of our life, even though we behave slightly differently because we're with different people, we have a consistency which says the love of Jesus is in us, in the way we behave, respond, speak and act. We need to be consistent and open and honest so that when people come up to us, if they come up to us and say, "You believe in God, so what is he like?" we can in effect say to them, "Well, look at my life. Watch me and you'll see what Jesus is like. You'll begin to see the difference that he's made." There is this question, do we have public and private lives? If we do, then we're called to live them consistently. We're called to live them with integrity, so that the good news of Jesus can be seen in every single area. That's sharing our lives with others. Let's just take a moment of quiet. Take a moment to think about the things we've discussed and the things that we've read and heard. And then we'll pray together. So as we go out to share our lives, to live our lives for God, may he walk with us and strengthen us and help us. And may God bless us and keep us. Amen. Please be seated. Please do remember, if you ever want to chat or pray with people after the service or at any point, then please do come and chat to myself or one of the leaders. Thank you.